Hello, and welcome to GoGo Radio, found exclusively on GoGo.com. My name is Mike Simpson, and on today's show, we are going to discuss exceptions in Java 6. Be sure to check out my GoGo profile and send in any questions or comments using the box below. All right, let's get started. When a method encounters an abnormal condition, known as an exception condition, that it can't handle itself, it may throw an exception. Throwing an exception is like throwing a beeping, flashing red ball to indicate that there's a problem that can't be handled where it occurred. Somewhere, you hope, this ball is going to be caught and the problem is going to be dealt with. Exceptions are caught by handlers positioned along the thread's method invocation stack. If the calling method isn't prepared to catch the exception, it throws the exception up to its calling method, and so on. And if one of the threads of your program throws an exception that isn't caught by any method along the method invocation stack, then that thread expires. When you program in Java, you must position catchers, which are the exception handlers, strategically, so that your program will catch and handle all exceptions from which you want your program to recover. First, let's talk about what these exception classes are. In Java, exceptions, like everything else, are objects. When you throw an exception, you throw an object. But you can't just throw any object as an exception. You may only throw those objects whose classes descend from a class called Throwable. Throwable serves as the base class for an entire family of classes declared in java.lang that your program can instantiate and throw. Throwable has two direct subclasses, exception and error. Exceptions, which are members of the exception family, are thrown to signal abnormal conditions that can often be handled by some catcher, although it's possible that they may not be caught and therefore could result in a dead thread. Errors, which are members of the error family, are usually thrown for more serious problems, such as out-of-memory error, that may not be so easy to handle. In general, code that you write should throw only exceptions. It should not throw errors. Errors are usually thrown by the methods of the Java application programming interface, or they're thrown by the Java virtual machine itself. In addition to throwing objects whose classes are declared in java.lang, then you may also throw objects of your own design. But if you want to create your own class of throwable objects, you need only declare it as some class, a subclass of some member of the throwable family. But in general, the throwable classes that you define should generally extend the class exception. I mean, they really should be exceptions. Whether you use an existing exception class from java.lang, or whether you create one of your own, depends upon the situation. In some cases, a class from java.lang will do just fine. For example, if one of your methods is invoked with an invalid argument, you could throw illegal argument exception. That already exists. That's a subclass of runtime exception in java.lang. But other times, you will want to convey more information about the abnormal condition than the classes from java.lang allow. Usually, the class of the exception object itself indicates the type of abnormal condition that was encountered. For example, if a thrown exception object has the class illegal argument exception, then that means that somebody passed an illegal argument. Sometimes you will want to indicate that a method encountered an abnormal condition that is not represented by a class in the throwable family. Let's take an example. Imagine that you're writing a Java program and it simulates the customer of some sort of a virtual cafe and they're drinking a cup of coffee. Now, what kind of exceptional conditions might occur? Well, the coffee could be too hot, the coffee could be too cold. And if the customer discovers that the coffee is too cold, then your program could throw a too cold exception. On the other hand, if the customer discovers that the coffee is overly hot, then the program could throw a too hot exception. These conditions could be exceptions because they are hopefully not the normal situation in the cafe. Exceptional conditions are not necessarily rare, they're just outside the normal flow of events. So if we wanted to define a hierarchy of exceptions to represent those situations, it would be fairly easy. We could define a class called temperature exception that extends exception. Then we can define two other classes, too cold exception and too hot exception. Both of those classes would extend temperature exception, so we'd have a two-level hierarchy. This family of classes, the temperature exception family, now declares three new types of exceptions that your program can throw. Note that each exception indicates, by its class, the kind of abnormal condition that would cause it to be thrown. A temperature exception indicates some kind of a problem with the temperature. The too cold exception simply indicates that something was too cold, and the too hot exception indicates something was too hot. Note also that temperature exception extends exception. It doesn't extend throwable, it doesn't extend error, it doesn't extend any other class declared in java.lang. Now you throw an exception by using the throw keyword with an object reference. For example, throw new too cold exception. Again, you may only throw a throwable or one of its subclasses. So the resultant code is pretty straightforward. Suppose that we want to throw an exception if the temperature of the coffee is greater than 85 degrees Celsius or 185 Fahrenheit. A simple if-then will suffice. You can have a form: if coffee temperature is greater than upper limit, where upper limit is either 85C or 185F, throw a new too hot exception. Similarly, if the temperature of the coffee is less than 65 degrees C or 150 degrees F, then use an if-then statement to throw a new too cold exception. Now let's take a look at catching exceptions. Of course, throwing an exception doesn't do much good if you don't handle it in some way. Now, to catch an exception in Java, you put the code that could generate the exception inside of a try block. And a try block is simply a set of curly braces preceded by the keyword try. And you follow the try block with one or more catch clauses. Each catch clause specifies one exception type that it's prepared to handle. The try block paces a fence around a bit of code that's under the watchful eye of the associated handlers. If that bit of code that's delimited by the try block throws an exception, the associated catch clauses will be examined by the Java virtual machine. If the virtual machine finds a catch clause that's prepared to handle that exception, then the program starts executing at the first statement of that catch clause. In our virtual cafe example, therefore, we would need two catch clauses. One to catch the too hot exception, and one to catch the too cold exception. The syntax is catch, open paren, too hot exception, E, close the paren, and then we follow that by the code to deal with the too cold exception. That code goes in curly braces. After that catch block, we'd have a second catch block, because we want to catch the too hot exception as well. The syntax for the second block is, of course, catch, open paren, too hot exception, E, close paren, followed by the code to deal with the too hot exception in curly braces. Within the curly braces of the catch block, the lowercase e is a reference to the exception object itself, allowing you to access methods and properties of the exception. Yes, you may have multiple catch clauses associated with a single try block. If you have multiple catch clauses, make sure that the subcatch catch clauses come before the superclass catch clauses, because each exception will be handled by only a single catch block. And if you put the superclass first, it will gobble up exceptions for itself and for the subclasses as well. Of course, if you forget that little one, the Java compiler will happily remind you, because you'll get a compile time error saying that the subclasses that are behind the superclass will never be reached. Now let's talk about embedding or storing information in an exception object. When you throw an exception, you're performing a kind of structured go-to from the place in your program, wherever it is, where an abnormal condition was detected, to a place where it can be handled. The Java virtual machine uses the class of the exception object that you throw to decide which catch clause, if any, should be allowed to handle the exception. But the exception doesn't just transfer control from one part of your program to another. It also transmits information. Because the exception is a full-fledged object that you can define yourself, you may embed information about the abnormal condition in the object before you throw it. The catch clause can then get that information by querying the exception object directly. We just mentioned that earlier, that we can access methods and properties of that exception object directly. For example, the exception class allows you to specify a string-based detail message to provide some details about the exception. You may retrieve that information by invoking getMessage on the exception object. When you need to embed more information into an exception object than you can represent with just a single string, then you can add data and access methods to your exception class. That would allow you, for example, to embed the actual temperatures in each too hot exception or each too cold exception, and then have access to them from within the exception object. If you throw, or your application generates, an uncaught exception, it will be handled by a default handler and result in the death of the thread. If the uncaught exception is in the main thread of the application, and the application didn't fire off any other threads that were still running when the main thread dies, then the application terminates. Now, a dead thread doesn't always cause the death of its application. It will only cause the death of the application when the dying thread is the last non-daemon thread running inside the application. In other words, you've got three normal threads running, one thread dies. As long as there are two non-daemon threads still going, application will still run. In most Java runtime environments, the default handler for an uncaught exception prints out the stack trace when the thread dies. Now let's talk about the throws part. Now, as you may have figured out from the examples that we've mentioned earlier, the Java language requires that a method mention in a throws clause the exceptions that it can generate. The method's throws clause indicates to client programmers what exceptions that they may have to deal with if they're going to invoke the method. Let's say that if a virtual person is going to drink coffee, that the drink coffee method could generate a too cold exception, a temperature exception, and an unusual taste exception. So if the drink coffee method says that it throws these three exceptions, that just means that the method throws them, but it doesn't catch them. Now the method may also throw too hot exception. And you might say, well, why don't we list too hot there? It doesn't appear there because drink coffee catches and handles it internally. Only exceptions that a method does not catch on its own and that could cause it to complete abruptly without being caught should appear in its throws clause. Although a throws clause lists exceptions that may cause a method to complete abruptly, the list is not necessarily complete because not everything that can be thrown by a method has to be put in a throws clause. You might say, why not? Because there are two kinds of exceptions in Java. There are checked exceptions and there are unchecked exceptions. Only checked exceptions have to appear in throws clauses. The general rule is that any checked exceptions may be thrown in a method must either be caught, and if they're not caught, then they must be declared in the throws clause. Checked exceptions are called checked exceptions because both the Java compiler and the Java virtual machine will make sure that this rule is obeyed. All throwables that are subclasses of exception are checked exceptions, except for subclasses of runtime exception. Now, if you're hearing this for the first time, you might say, well, what's the conceptual difference between a checked exception and an unchecked exception? A checked exception signals an abnormal condition that you absolutely want your client programmers to deal with. So if we say that we're going to go drink some coffee, we have to allocate some memory to make a new coffee cup and all that sort of stuff, that could generate an out-of-memory error. Not likely, but it could run out of memory. That's not a checked exception, though, because it's not a subclass of exception. Out-of-memory error is a subclass of error. Because you don't want client programmers to have to deal directly with the fact that drink coffee could fall apart because of low memory. Putting an exception in a throws clause forces client programmers that invoke your method to deal with exception because they're going to have to deal with it in their own throws clause or they're going to have to catch it. If they don't deal with the exception in one of those two ways, then those classes won't compile. Most of the unchecked throwables that are declared in java.lang are problems that the Java virtual machine is going to figure out. Errors usually signal abnormal conditions that you don't want your program to handle. Now, problems with linking, like a no-class default found error, or problems with memory, which is stack overflow error, could happen just about anywhere. And in the rare cases in which they do happen, then it usually makes sense that the thread would terminate. Most runtime exceptions, members of the runtime exception family, are also thrown by the Java virtual machine itself, but they're usually, if they're thrown, it's usually an indication of a software bug. Problems with an array, like an array index out of bounds exception, or problems with the pass parameters, like illegal argument exception, also could happen just about anywhere in a program. When exceptions like these are thrown, you're going to want to fix the bugs that cause them to be thrown. But you're not going to want to force clients to wrap every invocation of a method that uses arrays within a catch clause for array index out of bounds exception. You'll go crazy doing that. You can throw and catch unchecked exceptions, just like checked exceptions, but the Java language specification advises against throwing errors. It's intended that errors be thrown only by the Java runtime. You may, however, reasonably throw runtime exceptions. To decide whether to throw a checked exception or an unchecked runtime exception, you must look at the abnormal condition that you're signaling. Because if you're throwing an exception to indicate an improper use of your class, then what you're signaling is that there's a software bug. The class of exception that you throw probably should descend from runtime exception, which means it's going to be unchecked. Otherwise, if you're throwing an exception to indicate not a software bug, but an abnormal condition that your client programmer should deal with every time they use a method, then your exception should be a checked exception. Now we're going to take a look at the finally clause, the last part of dealing with exceptions. Once your Java virtual machine has begun to execute a block of code, which is the statements between the two matching curly braces, it can exit that block of code in any of several ways. It could just execute right past the closing curly brace. It could encounter a break or a continue or a return statement that would cause it to jump out of the block from somewhere in the middle. Or, if the exception is thrown and it's not caught inside the block, it could exit the block while trying to find a catch clause. Given that a block can be exited in many ways, it's important to be able to ensure that something happens upon exiting a block, no matter how the block had exited. For example, let's say that you open a file or open a connection to a database. You may want to make sure that that file gets closed or that database connection gets closed, no matter how the method completes, whether it completes normally or whether it completes abnormally. In Java, you express that desire with a finally clause. To use a finally clause, you do two things. One, you enclose the code that has the multiple exit points in the try block. We've talked about that before. And two, the code that must be executed when the try block is exited, you put that in a finally block. At least one clause, you either have to have either a catch clause or a finally clause with each try block. You got to have at least one of them. Now, it's possible to have both of them. You may have catch clauses and a finally clause. If you do that, you must put the finally clause after all of the catch clauses. Now, if you execute the code within a try block, you have an exception that's thrown. We jump into the catch clause to handle the exception. Then the finally clause will be executed after the catch clause. Now, if an exception is thrown and it's not handled by one of these catch clauses, you might say, well, what happens? Are we going to blow up? Are we going to skip over the finally code? Nope, the finally clause will still be executed. The Java virtual machine will execute the code in the finally clause before it continues searching elsewhere for an appropriate catch clause. So there's no way to leave a given try block without executing the code in the finally block. So remember that if we had an uncaught exception, we would normally pop up to our parent method to see if it could be handled by our parent method. But if there's a finally block, we will still execute the code in our finally block first. Now, you can do anything inside of a finally clause that you would normally do elsewhere, including breaks, continues, or return statements, or you throw exceptions. Now, if these things happen inside of a finally clause, they can have some unexpected effects. Let's say that we have a finally clause that we got into because we did a try, generated an exception, and we didn't have any working catch blocks. We get into the finally there. If the finally clause executes the return, then the method would complete normally via the return, not abruptly by throwing the exception. So the exception would have, in fact, been handled by the finally clause instead of by the catch clause. So basically, the finally clause swallows the exception. Another example here, consider a finally clause that's entered because a return true statement is inside the try block. If the finally clause executes a return false statement, then the method returns false. So Java goes to very great lengths to help you in dealing with error conditions. Java's exception mechanisms give you a structured way to perform a go-to from the place where an error occurs to the code that knows how to handle the error. These mechanisms also allow you to force the client programmers, those who are using your code by calling your methods, to deal with the possibility of an error condition that's encountered by your code. However, Java's mechanisms do not force you to design your programs to take advantage of these capabilities. So in the end, if you want your programs to handle your error conditions in a structured and methodical fashion, you have to use exception mechanisms correctly. I hope that you've enjoyed today's presentation. I look forward to your comments and questions. You may email your input to me by using the question box that's found on this page. I will be answering your questions and I will be replying to your comments in upcoming presentations. If you're interested in viewing my other shows, just search the GoGo Radio Archive for my name, Mike Simpson. If there is a show that you would like for me to do, please send me an email and let me know. Thank you for your time today, and remember to tune into GoGo Radio, found exclusively on GoGo.com.